The world is once again sharpening its focus on the prolonged war in Ukraine as its second anniversary approaches. Now, ahead of the Grimm commemoration, President Vladimir Putin held his first interview with a Western journalist since Russia's invasion began, which was labeled quickly by many experts as Putin's propaganda victory. The largely ineffectual interview made one thing clear: that negotiations remain a distant prospect after 2 years of violent clashes. Marking the anniversary, we bring you a special two-part series on the war in Ukraine as we mark the second anniversary on February 24th. In part one today, we dissect the man that started it all, KGB agent turned warlord President Vladimir Putin, for an in-depth analysis. This morning, we connect with Brian Taylor, professor of political science at Syracuse University and the author of the highly acclaimed book, The Code of Putinism. Thank you so much for joining us, Professor Taylor.
Thank you for the invitation.
We appreciate your insights. I have to begin with the interview that's being talked about, analyzed, torn apart, and it was kind of a painful one to listen to. It's stretching at 2 hours, starting with, frankly, what I can only dub as a 30-minute lecture by Vladimir Putin. We're referring to his sit-down with the former Fox News host Tucker Carlson. At the beginning of this very interview, Putin goes on to label Ukraine an artificial strait created by the Soviet Union. So based on your expertise, Professor Taylor, what do you make of this long history lecture at the start of the sit down?
Yeah, I thought what most people who watched probably thought, it was boring. But it was worse than boring. It was very flawed and I think in important ways dangerous. So I won't do what Putin did and bore your listeners with another history lecture, but his idea that what happened hundreds and hundreds of years ago on the territory of what we now call Ukraine should somehow dictate territorial borders in the 21st century is both absurd and dangerous when rulers try to implement these ideas. Can you imagine the chaos if other rulers around the globe launch wars to bring back imagined historical borders? And I should also add that the idea that Ukraine is an artificial state is no more or less true than it is of any other country. And there is plenty of historical evidence about the distinctiveness of the Ukrainian language and culture, the development of a modern sense of Ukrainian identity in the 19th and 20th centuries, and efforts to achieve political independence in the past. Mm. The reason the Soviet Union had a republic known as Ukraine was because Lenin and Stalin understood something that Putin apparently does not, that Ukraine is a real thing and no more or less real than Russia itself.
Professor Taylor, Putin is known to be a charismatic speaker as well, but does he really think he can legitimize the war using this flawed history lesson? Does it work within his own country?
I think some of what he says probably does resonate with average Russians who probably read some of the same history textbooks that Vladimir Putin read when he was a child and was taught this Soviet version of the country's history. And we know he has spent a lot of time on his own digging into history, but he comes away with a very flawed interpretation of what that means. But to answer your real question, does he believe this? I think he does. Otherwise, why would he have spent half an hour running through hundreds of years of Russian history with Tucker Carlson? It certainly was not well designed to convince the average American viewer that he has a legitimate purpose in Ukraine, because to most people it was just like, well, that was before the United States was even a country. What does this mean today in the 21st century?
In fact, Tucker Carlson continuously interrupts Vladimir Putin saying, I don't know how this is relevant. I don't know how this is relevant.
Exactly.
A second question that I wanted to ask in relation to that very interview is that, was there a peace deal on the table interrupted by the West? So during this interview, Putin claimed that the former British Prime Minister Boris Johnson talked Ukraine out of a peace deal. Johnson denies it, calling it total nonsense. What are your thoughts on this?
I agree with Johnson. This is a myth that Putin and the Kremlin have been spreading, but much like Putin's history lecture, this is flawed. It is true that there were Russian-Ukrainian negotiations in March and April of 2022, shortly after the February invasion, and that at times people thought they were making progress in these negotiations. And there was some hope for a while, but when the Ukrainians saw what the Russians had put on the table, they decided they were not interested. Russia wanted not only Ukrainian neutrality, which Zelensky, President Zelensky of Ukraine, was willing to contemplate, but what the Russians called, quote unquote, demilitarization of Ukraine, meaning the dismantlement of much of its military. So they had not reached an agreement. Putin claims that Russia pulled back its troops from around the Ukrainian capital, Kyiv, because they thought they had a deal. But the reality is, his military was defeated in its attempt to seize the Ukrainian capital, and they had to retreat. And what happened when they retreated was Ukraine found massive war crimes had been committed in the suburbs of Kyiv, including the city of Bucha, where over 450 people were killed. And Zelensky visited Bucha himself and with his own eyes saw these war crimes that had been committed. And at that point, it became simply politically impossible for Ukraine to commit to a deal with Russia, which they did not think they would enforce, right? So Boris Johnson went to Kyiv and agreed with that view, but he did not force the Ukrainians to do something they had not already decided on their own.
Based on your expertise, Professor Taylor, what is your overall assessment of this interview between Vladimir Putin and Tucker Carlson, and what does it mean for the ongoing war in Ukraine?
I don't think the interview really changed much in terms of the war. I believe Putin spoke to Carlson at this time because he was hoping that the US will stop supporting Ukraine, and he was hoping to affect the debate in Washington that's happening right now, this very week. But to those who watched the interview and paid attention, it should have become clear that Putin's objectives in the war have not changed. He thinks Russia should be able to control Ukraine and put in place a pro-Russian government. So for Putin, it's not so much about this territory or that territory, but the broader idea that Ukraine is an artificial country and has always been part of Russia. And to the extent people understand that if this is Putin's view, there's no reason to think he would be happy with, quote unquote, just Ukraine. He made menacing statements about Poland in the same interview. Poland is, of course, a NATO member state. I'm not saying he plans to attack Poland, but he didn't show any interest in withdrawing his army from the territory they control.
Professor Taylor, you alluded to the timing of this all, and which is why it's important to say Putin decided to sit down right before an important election coming up for him within the country. He's running for another presidential term of at least 6 more years, seeking to expand his rule of over 2 decades. Now, despite starting an immensely costly war in Ukraine, over 80% of the Russian population approves of his performance, according to a latest poll by an independent pollster, Levada Center. What do you make of this? And given the circumstances, are these polls accurate and enough for us to trust?
That's a really difficult question to answer, actually. And pollsters and political scientists and sociologists have been thinking a lot about this, really not just over the last year or two, but over decades. What does it mean to ask people what they think in an authoritarian state like Russia? As far as we can tell, Putin does have some important degree of popularity, although 80% is probably an unrealistic number. But it's really hard to know because the bigger issue is not just this poll or that poll, but that Putin has spent the last 25 years building a personalist dictatorship in which no alternatives to his rule are allowed to appear and allowed to challenge him. So the Kremlin controls elections, they control the media, they control the legislature, they control political parties, they control the police, right? They killed or threw in jail his major political opponents and so on. So no one can imagine an alternative to Putin because the system has been designed to convince people there is no alternative.
There was a New York Times guest essay by a Russian journalist by the name of Mikhail Zygar that I came across, and it read, the title read, "Putin's Puppets Are Coming to Life." It goes on to explain that Putin has utilized regime-friendly politicians to seemingly run against him, only to always come short of beating him in an important election. The system has been in place at least since Putin's first election in 2004. The essay goes on to say, it maintains the facade of Russia's imitation democracy. Is this arrangement no longer working out based on your expertise? Are circumstances changing leading up to this upcoming presidential election?
No, the arrangement continues to work. And I think what Zigar wrote is exactly correct. We can see this with the recent decision to not allow a politician named Boris Nadezhdin to get on the ballot. He was trying to get on the ballot. Apparently, he had not, as far as we can tell, agreed his candidacy with the Kremlin. Mm. And when they saw people lining up outside in the cold for hours to sign a petition to get him on the ballot, and opposition politicians, both in and outside the country, sort of speaking out in favor of Nadezhdin, they quickly made the decision to not certify his candidacy. So there are three other candidates on the ballot, but they're all from parties that cooperate with Putin. So it's not an election. It's a coronation of the czar.
Okay, which I go back to then that poll of 80% Russian support. As you've said, maybe there is a significant amount of supporters within Russia of those who see eye to eye with Putin's policies, or at least some of it, but 80% might be a gross exaggeration to a certain extent. Putin sees Ukraine as Russian, as you mentioned, Professor Taylor, and he has repeatedly stressed that Russia's goals in Ukraine remain unchanged. He says he's ready to talk with Ukraine, but only on his terms. So what are these terms? And is a possibility of a peaceful negotiation between Ukraine and Russia slim to none?
I think slim to none is right, unfortunately. And I think Putin has been quite consistent about what he wants from the very beginning of the invasion. He wants Ukraine and the outside world to recognize Russia's illegal annexation of six regions of Ukraine. An area, by the way, I would note is larger than all of South Korea. It's that large. He wants what he calls denazification, which means a Russian puppet government in charge in the capital of Kyiv. And he wants what he calls demilitarization, which means a very small military remaining in Ukraine, which would leave them defenseless against a possible future invasion. So given these demands, and I think given Putin's confidence that the war might be going his way, I don't see any realistic chance of a peace deal at the moment.
And our final question, I understand nothing is clear at this point, but how and when will this war end?
I think, unfortunately, the war is not likely to end anytime soon. And that means that the most likely scenario is it continues for years, bringing death and destruction to the people of Ukraine, as well as, you know, Russian soldiers. The thing that's going to affect the course of the war over the next year is being determined right now in the U.S. Congress, whether meaningful U.S. military assistance continues to arrive. If the U.S. Congress does not pass this military assistance bill, I think Ukraine will slowly begin to lose territory, although it will try to dig in and fight as much as possible. But given what Ukrainians know about what has happened in the territories currently occupied by Russia, torture chambers, massive deportation of Ukrainian children to Russia, forced Russianization, by which I mean forced use of the Russian language, destruction of Ukrainian books, that kind of thing. At the moment, a large majority of the Ukrainian population, despite the costs, remain determined to continue to fight and preserve their independence.
Professor Taylor, we appreciate your insights. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you again for the invitation.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.